Want to witness the birth of one of America's largest government programs? Want to be there, if not at the creation, definitely the shaping of it? Well, thanks to a crude executive recording system known as a dictaphone and the work of a historian, you can watch as Lyndon Johnson and two men named Wilbur forged Medicare. March 1965, and Lyndon Johnson is speaking to House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Wilbur Mills in regard to his Medicare bill. The program Medicare as an idea is not Johnson's. It is shaped in the Kennedy-Johnson campaign of 1960. Seniors would get coverage for visits to the hospital. But at this moment, what weighed heaviest on the president's mind was not hospitals, physicians, or diseases. It was Easter. "For God's sakes, let's get this bill before Easter," he screamed at Mills. "They make a poll every Easter, you know it? It asks people what they think of Congress and what they've done up to that point. Then the rest of the year, that record is what they write the editorials about." The Constitution, Article 1, Section 7, says that revenue bills originate in the House. This was a compromise intended to make the House a bit more powerful than the Senate. So, in that case, it could be said it's the founder's fault that Mills was getting harangued by the president at this moment. Mills was the person who could start this bill. Only Lyndon Johnson knew that his conversation with this powerful member of Congress was being recorded. It was not recorded in crystal clear sound. It was not recorded for future historians, but recorded so that the secretaries could take dictation. LBJ had an issue. He made so many promises, and it seemed so many obligations extracted from members of Congress that he forgot what he owed and what he was owed. A few people, sneaky, even tried to take advantage of his forgetfulness. Historian Michael Betchloss, in two books, Taking Charge and Reaching for Glory, better as audiobooks than print books, of course, prepared the best of these calls, along with some annotation. Something I recommend every listener reads. But back to the action. Mills is on the phone. Lyndon Johnson is in the Oval with another Wilbur. This Wilbur's Wilbur Cohen, his Undersecretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, and Supreme Policy Wonk of the Johnson administration. It could be said that Cohen was the invisible hand behind Medicare. LBJ turns to Cohen. "Explain to me what you stole from Burns." For those expecting a senior policy discussion, this comes off more Tony Soprano than leader of the free world. "Explain to me the supplemental you stole from Burns." Jimmy Burns was a top Republican in Ways and Means. He was proposing elder care, an alternative to Johnson's program that had, in addition to the snappy name, support from doctors, something that Johnson's Medicare bill did not. And it had a feature that Medicare did not: coverage of doctor's bills. Medicare, as proposed by the Kennedy-Johnson ticket in 1960, was simply paying seniors' hospital bills, not for their trips to the doctor. "Well," Cohen responded to the president, "generally speaking, it's about physician services." Cohen was used to working with his sometimes difficult boss. "Physician," the president asks Cohen. "Now my doctor pumps my stomach to see if I got any ulcers. That's a physician?" Cohen indicated that the president was correct. "Any MD, and he charges what he wants?" What doctors would charge was of interest to the president. American Medical Association was opposed to Medicare because they thought it would reduce physician fees. "No," Wilbur says, "he doesn't quite charge what he wants. The HEW secretary would have to make arrangements with Blue Cross Blue Shield to regulate the fees of the doctor and pay the doctor. This intermediary, Blue Cross Blue Shield, or one of those, would determine the policy, so the government would not have its long hand." Lyndon Johnson cut him off. "Good explanation. Too much detail for Lindy." "All right. Any limits on this?" Cohen responded. "The individual patient pays $50 and then 20%. 20% of everything after that," LBJ finished his sentence. "That's good. Keeps the hypochondriacs out." For most people, Cohen indicated, it pays the majority of the cost. "They could borrow that amount or get their folks to pay their part," the president said. "Good. And the insurance companies are still raising hell and mad about this?" Yes, Cohen answered. They are going to go to the Senate and raise hell about this because, frankly, there's no longer any need for them. No longer any need for private insurance companies to sell insurance to the over 65 crowd. I should pause here to note that Cohen, despite what he said on the dictaphone, was wrong. There is actually, as it turns out, a good market for insurance companies in supplemental insurance policies. LBJ wasn't much interested in these details anyway. Wonderful. Now remember this. 9 out of 10 times I get into trouble, it's because things lie around. Cohen was ready. They want to bring it up next week, Mr. President. They want to, but they might not, Johnson responded. The doctors get organized and the others get organized against this bill. I damn near killed my education bill letting it lie around. It's like a dead cat in the door. He then went on and on about his education bill to Cohen. And, as if he only then realized, he still had Congressman Mills, the chairman of Ways and Means, on the line. He jumped back on. For God's sakes, don't let dead cats on your porch, Wilbur. Sam Rayburn used to always say that. Don't let dead cats lie on your porch. Welcome to the creation of the Medicare bill. A couple of things are clear from our brief stint as flies on the wall in the White House, thanks to the dictaphone machine. Although the bill was created between a Democratic congressman and an undersecretary for the Democratic president, it contained a stolen idea from the Republicans, one which inadvertently led to the expansion of the program. A hospital insurance bill became a total health care bill for seniors. The Republicans did not hash the bill out with Democrats at a private meeting. Jimmy Burns' Eldercare bill was an attempt to undermine Medicare. Give Republicans something to vote for. But a kind of virtual bipartisanship occurred. This same kind of virtual cooperation occurred with the current health care bill, especially its provisions designed to appeal to opponents, even though everyone was well aware those opponents would vote against the bill anyway. It was an attempt to reduce the opposition's strength. A universal government-run health care was not even proposed with the current health care bill passed. Instead, a mandate to buy insurance from private companies. Very similar to Republican Mitt Romney's plan in Massachusetts and the Republican plans of 1994. A second point to the dictaphone record is that President Lyndon Johnson was much more involved in the creating of Medicare, though he allowed Mills to take the credit. Conservative Mills worried about the cost, but settled on the plan provided by Cohen, who did the details. Mills knew, after the election of 1964, that some kind of Medicare bill was going to be passed. Most importantly, Johnson acted as a catalyst, emphasizing the urgency with holidays and polls and dead cats. The program was passed by the House 313 to 115. Over 70 Republicans joined Democrats to pass Medicare. Their votes were not needed for passage. Could have been passed entirely with Democratic votes and likely represent Republicans at the time seeing the writing on the wall and voting for the Medicare program that would benefit seniors in their districts. Those 70 votes have become important today, though they were cast in 1965. As in contrast, President Obama's health care plan, the Democratic health care reform plan, got 0 Republican votes in the House. Despite having meetings, it appears President Obama could not get Republicans to do what they had done in 1965. Yet, Medicare was not exactly passed in a spirit of bipartisanship either. The comparison to the 1965 vote is only valid if one considers the final House vote, where Republicans joined with Democrats. Yes, there Republicans voted for the measure. But in committee, for years, 4 years to be exact, Republicans provided 10 solid no votes for Medicare. That, along with a few Southern Democrats, held the bill up and led to the bill not reaching the floor of the House until after the 64 elections. The Republicans had some strong allies in their opposition. The American Medical Association saw a government-run program for seniors as a precursor to doctors being employed by the government, and, along with their spokesperson, Ronald Reagan, opposed the Medicare bill. Reagan was used on a special record that was sent to doctors' wives to play to friends in coffee clutches, a kind of early viral marketing, meetup.com type thing. Barry Goldwater said of Medicare, next the government will buy seniors fruit baskets or cigarettes. Republican Gerald Ford, Donald Rumsfeld, then a congressman from Illinois, voted against it. George H.W. Bush, slowly becoming a candidate for Congress, spoke out against it and called it socialized medicine. Then a Senator Bob Dole voted no. Republican Minority Leader Everett Dirksen said, why should I be allowed to take dollars from some young factory worker paid on the promise that we will take care of him later? I'm wealthy. I don't need the government to pay for my health care. Ronald Reagan, campaigning for governor the next year, campaigning for governor of California, was attacked for his opposition to the Medicare bill. But he said he would have even gone for a program that provided care for all, not just seniors, if they were low-income seniors, low-income people. Jacob Javits opposed Medicare on similar argument. Why is it universal? Why do even rich seniors get it? The opinions on Medicare were more complex than on the surface. The American Medical Association Republicans supported an existing bill known as CareMills. CareMills provided low-income coverage for the elderly's hospital costs. But there was a problem with CareMills. It was financed by federal grants to states. The states had to apply for it, and the states had to match the money paid out by the federal government. They had to pay 20 to 50% of the cost. Not all states had that money. Out of an estimated 10 million seniors who were considered low income and could benefit from the program, only about 500,000 got coverage through CareMills. Dick Morris once told his then client, Bill Clinton, that in France, everyone supports the welfare system because in France, everyone gets something, even if it's just a little bit if they happen to be high income. Lyndon Johnson, in a similar fashion, wanted Medicare to be universal, to apply to all seniors with no income test. In a very similar fashion, Franklin Roosevelt made the same decision about Social Security for political reasons. Everybody had to have some stake in it. For Lyndon Johnson, passage of Medicare was a big event. One of the three bills he most wanted: education, health care, and voting rights. At the last minute, handed a bill for his signature from the Congress, Lyndon Johnson decided to go to Independence, Missouri, and sign the Medicare bill with Harry Truman, former president. This is your bill, he told the former president on the phone. Truman was frail from a recent fall, and he became the first U.S. citizen to get a Medicare card. But outside of the former president, others were not so quick to sign up. Indeed, in its first year, Medicare, which required a sign-up and a $3 a month premium payment, almost looked like a flop. It was to begin June 1966, with sign-ups ending as of December 1965. There were only 2 million seniors that had joined Harry S. Truman in obtaining a Medicare card. The Johnson administration and its new Bureau of Health Insurance got in gear. Millions of brochures went out to encourage seniors on Social Security rolls to join Medicare. Computers were set up in Baltimore to manage the new rolls. 622 offices for the Bureau of Health Insurance were set up in regions throughout the country. 9,000 workers, some were brought in from other departments to process seniors' applications. It was a tremendous turnaround. In just a month, by January 1966, 17.8 million seniors were signed up for Medicare. Wilbur Cohen called it the greatest operation of the American government since D-Day. Indeed, it was the cornerstone of the Great Society that Lyndon Johnson announced in his re-election run at an Ann Arbor, Michigan speech. It remained consistently popular. When Republican Richard Nixon reached the White House, he never attempted to dismantle Medicare, and in fact recommended to Congress to expand the program. Ronald Reagan, not as a spokesman anymore, but now as Republican president, was loath to attack the program. The 1966 cost of the program was $3 billion. The cost in 1993, $144 billion. 2008, $350 billion. The cost has expanded over time. There are a variety of reasons for the cost. Healthcare has increased, the amount of things you can do with healthcare, new devices, new pills, new equipment. But to some extent, it comes back to the deal that Wilbur Mills and Wilbur Cohen worked out. to limit partisan rancor and to limit the opposition of doctors. Medicare would pay doctors the fee that they could expect in the market. Once passed, there was a larger problem with Medicare: how to administer it and how to deal with the opposition of the very people who had to make the services happen: doctors and insurance companies. It would do no good to give seniors a Medicare card if there was no one that would take it. Insurance companies, despite raising hell about the bill, pretty quickly came to the Social Security office in Bethesda to make a deal with the Johnson administration. After all, Medicare essentially did is create a huge employer, if you will, a huge commissioner of healthcare services for millions of Americans. An insurance company would need to actually make the payment and work with doctors. Insurance companies wasted no time in forgetting their opposition to the bill and seeking those huge contracts with the newly created Bureau of Health Insurance. Doctors, physicians, that was quite a bit harder. Many called for a boycott of Medicare after the bill had been passed. It was thought doctors might refuse to see patients who used Medicare as a payment. That would border on a violation of the Hippocratic Oath, and in any case, was a really lousy PR situation for doctors. Johnson never took the threat seriously. "Just like chickens," he told George Meany, the AFL-CIO, "they're going to know where they're fed." It wouldn't look good for doctors. It wouldn't look good for doctors to be refusing to treat patients. The conservatives, moderates, you might say, in the American Medical Association opposed the bill but resisted the call for boycotts. But the call for boycott was so strong at the grassroots levels among doctors that there were calls to impeach the president of the AMA when he didn't support a boycott. The Ohio branch of the AMA called for a boycott of its own involving Ohio physicians. Johnson's staff suggested a meeting at the White House between the president and doctors. Lyndon Johnson did just that. He invited the AMA board to the White House. Now here we get a little bit of what was called the Johnson treatment. Some tactics that were probably easier for Johnson to pull off than any president could now. We know what happened at the meeting from the notes of a member of the AMA board. Lyndon Johnson started talking on and on and on how much good doctors did in America and how doctors had treated his father, etc., about nothing that these AMA doctors wanted to hear. He read many parts of the bill to the AMA doctors, including the parts of the bill that said the government would not interfere with medical practice and that doctors would be paid their, quote, usual and customary fees according to the region in which they practice and the last few medical bill information that they could submit. Then, as the account of the AMA board member has it, Johnson got up and stretched. Now, you must understand, when you're in a meeting in the Oval Office and the president stands, so does everyone else. So all the members of the AMA board had to stand when the president got up to stretch, just to let him know that he was still boss. If there was any doubt that his stretching was intentional, Johnson did it three more times during his meeting. Finally, he turned to the AMA president and said, "Your president needs your help." He asked the AMA if they could help out the administration with recruiting doctors to go to Vietnam. A noble goal. "Of course," the AMA president, Apple, said. Johnson's eyes lit up immediately. "Well, that's wonderful." And he signaled to his press aide, Bill Moyers, "Bill, get the press in here." Little did the AMA know, they were walking into a trap. The press came into the Oval Office, and Johnson merely relayed the news that the AMA had agreed to help the administration recruit doctors to go to Vietnam. While the reporters took note of this news, that the doctors would be helping the administration, they also knew what this meeting in the Oval Office was really about. They were also interested, and LBJ certainly knew this, in what the AMA's position was now on the Medicare bill. Would they boycott? They asked the doctors. President responded, These guys are helping where our boys are defending our freedoms of our land, President Johnson said. I'm sure they will abide by the law. And then, in a classic Johnson treatment move, he pointed to the AMA president. Why don't you tell him? President Apple was now on the spot. He turned to the reporters. Of course we will follow the law. It was a done deal after that. About 2 weeks later, the American Medical Association announced that they would work with Medicare now that it was passed. They would not boycott. A year later, at the AMA's convention, most members had a positive view of the Medicare program. Medicare was actually good for the individual's doctor's business. They were indeed paid their usual and customary fee. Some may have even made more, where they may have made a deal with a patient who was indigent and couldn't pay. There was no need to make a deal with the government. Medicare is a success story of the Great Society. The bill's consistently popular. It has reduced senior poverty and has provided relief to older Americans as they reach an age where they're more prone to health issues. It's also provided a benefit to the family of those seniors. The president that appeared before Congress in 1967 didn't look like the president who pushed his education, Medicare, and voting rights bills through the Congress. And we must do what we can do, he said in his speech, which had been rewritten several times, to accommodate budgets and priorities. The president looked tired. Newsweek suggested after his State of the Union that he didn't look like a president who was running again. They would be right. The cost of the programs were too much for a conservative Congress. Vietnam was costly, spiraling out of control. And Lyndon Johnson's party had lost the midterms of 1966. 45 Democrats in the House went to defeat. More importantly, 3/4 of the freshmen who were elected in Lyndon Johnson's landslide of 1964 were now out of Congress, replaced by Republicans. Republicans won governorships too, they won state houses, and they captured 1/3 of the congressional seats, normally solid Democratic South, thanks to the civil rights issue. Republicans did not control the House or Senate after the 1966 elections, and they made no attempt to repeal or reverse a program that 95% of seniors were utilizing. In the election campaign of 1966, Republicans were a bit at odds over what the message would be. Vietnam was the big issue that was causing pain, but the leadership of the Republican Party were loath to come out with an official position prior to the midterms. Whatever we say on Vietnam, Republicans said, will be outdated in 5 days. The situation was changing too much. Republicans knew that at least a part of the country were angry about the civil rights legislation that passed, but Republicans had helped to pass those bills. Yet, in 1966, the Southern Republicans campaigned against where it was useful. Vietnam and voting rights sunk LBJ's party. Once again, an opposition party ran on a sometimes contradictory message, a very general, a very vague message, still won a midterm. Medicare was not created in a vacuum. It existed as part of a series of measures designed to create the largest government expansion, save the New Deal. Federal education aid, housing, permanent food stamp program. The nation was 2 years away from landing a man on the moon. That nation would spend, between NASA and the Apollo missions, $20 billion to do it. So, 1/4 of that amount was used to pay for grandma and grandpa's health care. Okay. By contrast, President Obama's health care reform bill comes at a time when the government is expanding its muscle a bit. Fannie Mae, TARP, stimulus. But due to delays in Congress, also at a time when this type of muscular action, costs and deficits are big concerns in Washington and the nation. Medicare did not succeed immediately. In fact, supporters of health care reform may find solace in knowing, as I was unaware before researching this topic, that Medicare suffered some hiccups for its first 9 months. There's a very similar atmosphere indeed around the passage of Medicare that there was around the passage of the recent health care reform bills. If one listens to the record that the AMA sent out to doctors' wives, Ronald Reagan saying, "In your sunset years, you will tell your children about how you were once free." compares it to Republican Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee saying, "Freedom died a little bit today on the passage of the health care bill." There was some concern over the effects of Medicare, which mirror today's concerns. Will there be overcrowded doctor's offices and hospitals? The AHA had supported Medicare, the American Hospital Association, just as they supported the current health care reform bill. How could they not? It held the promise of new hospital customers paid for by the government. But still, everyone wonders, will hospitals be ready for the influx of customers? Concerned about cost, particularly when Vietnam was costing more than was expected, and Congress didn't want to pay for both guns and butter. The atmosphere now seems a bit in that way, just like 1965. And Johnson got one of his achievements, but one that probably hurt his congressional majority. If not as a specific issue, as Medicare was fairly popular, as a culmination of costs. There is a difference right there, in that Medicare was a popular idea, both for seniors and for those with elderly parents. It was a popular idea among Americans, facing increased hospitalization costs. At least in the early going, the Democratic health care reform bill is not as popular. Most polls, and I have a fairly recent list of polls from late March, early April, CNN, Quinnipiac, Washington Post, Fox, show over 50% oppose the plan. Some as much as the high 50s oppose the plan. This does not surprise me. The plan supported by President Obama, passed by the Democrats, is confusing with the subsidies and the mandates. It provides universal care, but not a clearly stated universal benefit. Most Americans are simply doing what they do now, obtaining insurance through their employer. The plan solves the uninsured problem, something I do think President Obama will get credit for, both in his reelection attempt and as a legacy as a president. But the plan is one of those things. Good for 2012, perhaps, hurts his party in 2010. There's a part of this that is in the president's control and a part of it that's not. The lack of branding and salesmanship for healthcare reform goes to the White House and the Democratic Party, starting with the name. Patient Bill of Rights, AmeriCare, Medicare, Elder Care, the aptly named Social Security, which, by the way, was changed from the more boring name of Economic Security by a crafty politician. Where's the name of this plan? It sounds like a small deal, but it's pretty important if you look at the history of other programs. And where's the benefit to most Americans? As part of the stimulus plan, the federal government has picked up the tab on COBRA up to 60%. It's a huge and undersold benefit to the American people. It's currently up for renewal. It doesn't matter if you don't take advantage of it. It's there when you need it. If you have to go on COBRA, as part of the stimulus bill, the government was paying 60%. In the blindness of Washington, I believe, this appears to be a non-issue, not enough to go out there to the people with. It reminds me of when Clinton was president and his pollsters were showing that his family leave bill, which passed in the first few weeks of his administration, which he didn't consider at all a huge change, was actually hugely popular among Americans and about the only positive thing that Americans in 1994 could say about Clinton. I think this is similar here. The benefit to Americans on COBRA has been left out of the discussion. It could have been included as part of this healthcare reform effort. Within the healthcare bill, there are Medicaid increases for nursing homes, for patients who spend down assets and then thus are no longer covered by Medicare, something that a middle-class family member could easily do. There's an increase for Medicaid for just those cases. There is a benefit to families who have young people, 26 or under, and don't have insurance of their own to be covered by the family plan. That one's been mentioned a little bit more. These are existing things that could have been talked about more. Totally undersold. So it's healthcare reform. A boring name. Nobody likes reform anyway. That card's been overplayed. It doesn't change what you're doing immediately. So we've now passed this big bill. People have heard about it. Democrats are going to be out there running on it in the midterms, but it doesn't change what most people do. And then you hear things about how it might increase costs and run up the deficit and might even cost you more. And the pollster calls you up, and then you get the low 30s approval. Should politicians only do things that are popular? Of course not. Are there great problems that need to be solved? Of course there are. Sometimes you just have to do something because it's the right thing to do. And one can make that argument about universal health care. There's a group of uninsured, need to take care of them. It's going to be part of President Obama's legacy, I'm sure. But in any American program, we should look to other programs that have been passed. There's usually a benefit or potential benefit for everyone that's paying for it. It's harder to see that in this healthcare reform bill. The Democratic Party is now selling T-shirts with Vice President Joe Biden's quote, "Healthcare reform is a BFD, a big blanking deal." And why not? It's a free country. People need to be clothed, and some like to wear T-shirts with vice presidential quotes. And he's right, it is a big historic deal to have solved the problem of the uninsured. A better approach, a better branding would have helped make a more positive impact on most Americans. That's the part the president can control. To be fair, the part that President Obama cannot control is the target group, this group of uninsured. Because President Johnson took the good parts. President Johnson took the most sympathetic group, the elders, and gave them health care. What was left is a group of people who for a variety of reasons don't have insurance. Some because they choose to. Some because they're too young and don't have a job yet that covers, provides insurance. Some because they're self-employed. Some because they're recently laid off. It's a very different group with a lot of different situations. Well, you could have perhaps focused legislation on a certain groups of people, cancer patients, the unemployed, etc., that we might be more sympathetic for. Really, Johnson stole President Obama's Medicare moment. What I've tried to do is talk a bit about the general atmosphere surrounding Medicare to give you an idea how it compares and contrasts with the general atmosphere around the passage of this health care bill. And as after Medicare, a midterm election occurred, a midterm election a little bit sooner after the passage is going to occur now. What'll happen with the pattern of the 2010 elections? Will it follow 1966, a big defeat for the incumbent party? The result I'm not ready to call, but the pattern of how the election campaign will play out, I think, is callable. I would not be surprised if, despite whatever you're hearing now, Republicans do not necessarily spend all their time on the healthcare reform bill. I would not be surprised if history's any indication, if Republicans as the opposition party do what almost always seems to be done, a disparate campaign with different messages depending on the district. In some areas, bank bailouts and TARP will be the issue, ignoring that Republicans, in the most part, voted for the TARP bill and that the Republican presidential candidate, John McCain, and the Republican president at the time, George W. Bush, supported it. Republicans are divorced from those people at this time, and I noticed TARP showing up in Republican radio messages and in certain materials as one of the government's overreaching. In other areas where perhaps being careful to see if there's no new community hospitals being built or expanded in their district or not a lot of subsidy recipients in their district, the healthcare reform will become an issue. The economy will also be a large factor. While improvement is being shown in the economy, it's not reaching all the people left to the point that it'll have a political impact. We can revisit that consideration a little closer to the election as we see the economic numbers. Everything but the kitchen sink is usually what opposition parties throw at the incumbent party, and I expect to see that, and not necessarily an all-out focus on repealing the health care bill in, just as Republicans didn't run against Medicare, despite their opposition, in 1966. I've talked a bit about the atmosphere, and so it's only fitting that I again repeat that in 1965, as we were passing Medicare, the nation was spending a large amount of money, and just 4 years later would reach the surface of the moon. Another priority of President Kennedy, just like Medicare, would be fulfilled. by the American government. What is in stark contrast to that today is that America now has abandoned its plans for a second moon trip. We haven't completely eliminated NASA, but the Obama administration has made it clear that space is not as much of a priority. Half of the argument for healthcare reform is reducing costs rather than expanding them. I want to thank you for listening. Website's myhistorycanbeatupyourpolitics.com. There's a link there to the archive that's still $9.99, not for much longer, and to the Facebook site where you can discuss and talk to other listeners and talk about things. Got a bunch of casts coming up. In a cast, I'm going to talk about the John Paul Stevens resignation from the Supreme Court, and I'm going to talk about, I promised I would sort of review the book Game Change about the 2008 election, and I'm going to do that. I want to thank you for listening.